Well, the first thing I'm going to pray for is that my voice holds up. But other than that, today we're reading about the presentation of the Lord and the purification of Mary in the temple. So which temple was it and where? It was the temple in Jerusalem. Nazareth, which was their hometown, never had a temple, and Bethlehem had not had one for 300 years by that time. So it was Jerusalem. Where did they come from to get to Jerusalem? Well, let's look at the chronological order of everything, and we can make a pretty good assumption. First, Mary delivers Jesus in Bethlehem, and I doubt she would immediately want to ride on a donkey for 5 days to get to Jerusalem, where their home was. So a few days of recuperation, and now it's day 8 since the birth of Jesus, and it's time for the circumcision of the baby Jesus. Much to the surprise of some, Jesus was not circumcised at the presentation in the temple. It was a Jewish law that had been given to the Jews back in Exodus by God that male babies would be circumcised on the 8th day. This circumcision procedure was normally done at home with the baby sitting on the mother's lap, and was usually done by the father, assisted by someone else that was familiar with the process and had the necessary instruments, usually a piece of sharp flint stone. By now, the Holy Family was well into the 40 days till they would have to be back in Jerusalem for the purification. So because it would have been at least a 10-day round trip to Nazareth and back, to save the expense and the discomfort for virtually no gain, we can speculate that they came the 9 miles straight from Bethlehem to the temple. And then after the ceremony, for the first time since the birth of Jesus, they returned to Nazareth. So why am I spending so much time talking about the purification, the circumcision, and the dedication of the firstborn to God? Well, they all have something in common with a whole pile of rules that God gave the Israelites in Leviticus 11. God gave a whole list of unclean foods that they could not eat, like pigs, camels, rock badgers, the hare, and others. Then unclean creatures, like the eagle and other birds of prey. There is a whole list there of various birds that are forbidden to eat. The list of things that could make you unclean is immense and would create a condition that you would have to bathe and clean yourself or break your stove or more. My goodness, what is wrong with lobster? Seriously. And if you touch a dead insect, you are unclean until nightfall. You wouldn't be able to swat a mosquito because you couldn't touch a dead bug. Good thing they didn't live in Alberta. We would have ran out of water cleaning ourselves thousands of years ago had they lived here. You can go to Leviticus 11 and read the pages of rules for yourself. So God gave the Israelites all these rules to follow, and then we read in Matthew 15, 11 through 20, and Jesus said, "It is not what goes into the mouth of man that makes him unclean or defiled, but what comes out of his mouth, this defiles a man." Let's look at this again. God says, on one hand, directly to the Israelites, you can't eat these foods because it will make you unclean. And then we hear from Jesus, on the other hand, these foods don't defile you. As we go along, we find out Jesus wipes out a huge amount of rituals and laws that they had in place. But anyways, Jesus is God. So why the confusion? First, you can, and then you can't. I think I have the answer. Jesus finally tasted lobster and realized that he had made a mistake. No, I take that back. Just joking. Taking another look at God's original laws about all the unclean things, he didn't say by doing any of these things, like eating certain foods or touching something, would harm you physically. He said it would defile you, meaning ritually you would be unclean. In essence, because you disobeyed God's law or rules. The Israelites knew all too well that God was prepared to punish them if they did not listen. And the Bible is full of examples of what of God just doing that. So why would God impose almost impossible laws on the early Israelites and then enforce them? Again, the answers are frequently right in front of us if we observe the entire Bible instead of only a verse here and there. The Israelites were notorious for intermingling with other nations and cultures, and almost always adopted the other cultures instead of sharing what they knew about God with the other cultures. A great example of this is when they were under Egyptian rule for over 400 years, for over 400 years, and had adapted to the Egyptian way of life. So when God freed them from captivity, the Israelites not only took their suitcases, but took part of the Egyptian culture with them. As soon as the Israelites were left unattended, like when Moses went up the mountain to get the Ten Commandments, the Israelites made a golden calf as a god. This was a culture that the Egyptians would have done. Speaking of Moses for a minute, I thought he was a good guy, but I found out that he was the only person to break all Ten Commandments at the same time. The person beside you will explain that later. Anyway, because the Israelites were so tempted to adopt other cultures, God gave them so many restrictions of what they could eat, touch, do, and not do, that it would be difficult for any other culture or nation to relate to them. So he found a way for the Israelites to be segregated from other societies. It reminds me of a guy that I worked with many years ago. His whole diet was steak and potatoes. He ate it for breakfast, dinner, and supper. He claimed he never changed his diet. He didn't get invited to other people's places very often due to his rigid diet. So he had segregated himself from others by his own habits, just like the Israelites did in their life cycle, in their lifestyle, sorry. On the other hand, it didn't bother the guy very long because he died very young. Joseph and Mary were following God's law as close as they could. And I imagine by all the rules they had to follow, not to mention the traveling and so on, it was not very convenient or economical. But they seemed to be doing their best. So when Jesus turned and said, "You don't have to follow these rigid rules anymore," he was lifting the burden of the laws off their shoulders. Because it was at that point in time that he was going to let them intermingle with other cultures and nations to spread the voice of Christianity throughout the world. I'm personally happy that all these rules listed in Leviticus don't apply to me today, as I'm sure most of you do. But that doesn't mean that God doesn't have rules and laws for us today. We certainly preach on the rules God has informed us of and will either give us discipline or reward, depending on whether we are following God's rules or not. It comes down to our choice. So ask yourself, what do I choose? God's rules and his rewards that last for eternity? Or choose not to follow his rules and take the punishment for eternity. God doesn't choose our fate. We do. Unfortunately, we just don't know how much time we have to make up our mind.